Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. It is a Thursday morning, December the 5th, 2024. That first Thursday of the month, Brent Beard, that typically signals we have conference championship weekend, usually right in front of us. I guess there's been some like December 1st conference championship games, but usually you're going to be in this sort of time frame. And you know what else that means for our co-host here, Brent Beard? Heisman Trophy voter, and you are in possession now of that ballot, as I understand it, Brent.
The ballot was emailed a few days ago, so all the voters have it. It will be I think we know what's going to happen, or at least we have a good idea. I mean, Travis Hunter from Colorado, Ashton Gentry from Boise State, Cam Ward from Miami, Dylan Gabriel from Oregon, or the top-rated prospects to win the Heisman. Now, Trav, and you picked up on this immediately, I know what, and I'm sure some of our viewers, listeners did, what is unusual about this is that for the first time in quite a while, we're not going to have anybody from the SEC. That's not to say that we don't have candidates. And Trav, the last time that happened, 2016, Jonathan Allen was number 7 from Alabama. And 2017, Kerryon Johnson from Auburn was the highest SEC finisher. Trav, a very unusual year for the league, isn't it?
It's been unusual. It's been an unusual year in general, especially with the 12-team playoff coming on. And we're certainly going to talk about that as we move throughout the program. But Brent is sworn to secrecy when it comes to his ballot. Now, after the award is presented, Brent can talk about his order of finish. But I think you sort of alluded to it. Seems pretty cut and dry. Mm-hmm. I'm not a Heisman Trophy voter, so I would tell you that Travis Hunter would be atop my ballot if I had one. And then, you know, kind of proceed from there with the most likely candidates, which, as you said, doesn't include an SEC individual in 2024. But Brent, it was certainly a big final regular season weekend in the Southeastern Conference. Some things were made more clear, especially where this weekend's Southeastern Conference championship game is concerned. Mm-hmm. Texas in a reunion of those two rivals after so many years gets it done on the road in College Station. So it is the Texas Longhorns and the Georgia Bulldogs coming up this Saturday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia. So we look forward to that. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the program as well. But that weekend that spanned really Friday and Saturday last weekend, and it was wild in a lot of ways. We'll look at Friday. Ole Miss takes care of business in the Egg Bowl, takes out Mississippi State. I thought that game for Ole Miss could be kind of like the Oklahoma game was in Oxford, and it really kind of played out almost identical to that, a 26-14 win for Lane Kiffin's team, 9-3 on the season, 5-3 in the Southeastern Conference. But, boy, that nightcap, that stole the show for maybe the entire college football season with Georgia in 8 overtimes. Finally subduing those pesky Yellow Jackets from the Flats over in Atlanta.
Yeah, I give Brent Key a lot of credit for what he's done at Georgia Tech. Haynes King was just remarkable, and obviously the big play of the game, the Haynes King fumble.
Yeah,
that we now have had a chance to look at it. Very much could have been a targeting call. And look, Trav, from what I remember, King basically had got the first down.
Yeah, that was really a potential game ender right there. And, you know, you give credit for the hit, but it did check some boxes, it appeared, where targeting is called. That being said, if you think you're getting that call in that spot.
No, good luck. Yeah, really.
Doesn't mean you're wrong to think you shouldn't get it, but if you really think you're going to get that call, either on the field or in the booth, good luck holding your breath there.
And obviously it propelled Georgia into the championship game, as we will talk about later. But And it really makes me wonder about Georgia's mindset. I know what Kirby Smart's mindset is that that SEC championship game is still very, very important to him. That was ingrained in him through Nick Saban. And Trev, I think that's a minor theme of all of these championship games. Who really wants to be there and who wants to win it?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, and for Texas, it's certainly more than a novelty. This is a chance to win a Southeastern mm-hmm. Conference championship in your first year in the league. Yeah. And I know you think, well, this is Texas. If they don't win it this time, they'll be back. Hey, you know, remember when Missouri went back-to-back really? Years after going into the league?
Yes.
When have you seen Missouri again?
Now, haven't.
That's understanding. There's a little bit of a difference in the programs in Mizzou and Texas. But the point being, it's still a coveted title. It's still, in golf vernacular, it would still be considered a major championship.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the national championship is the equivalent of maybe the British Open or the Masters. But an SEC championship is at least a PGA Absolutely. Championship
yeah.
in pro golf. So not a bad thing to have there in the old portfolio. Georgia did what championship teams do, though. 21 fourth quarter points to get that thing into overtime. I give Haynes King a lot of credit. I know he had the fumble. That was a brutal hit that he took.
It was.
Still threw for over 300, rushed for over 100, which kind of takes you back to this Georgia defense, which hasn't always been that Georgia defense during the course of the season.
No, and look, I think that's going to be extremely important with that and with that Texas – offensive line and the way that folks have run on Georgia this year. And Trev, I would go past even the SEC championship game is going to be what kind of shape is that line of scrimmage going to be for Georgia that we've often taken for granted that is maybe the best in the league. How far is that going to take them in the playoffs this year to me is a major question.
It's not a great Georgia offensive line, but I think they're going to be in a better place this time than they were in Austin in the regular season as far as personnel and who they have available. I like Georgia to win. I know we're supposed to probably say this. I like Georgia to win Saturday.
Yeah,
I do. And part of that has to do with, I know we have questions about the Georgia defense, but I think not having to deal with a Haynes King or a Jalen Milroe in terms of that two-way issue that you can have with those kind of guys. I think Quinn at times, you know, he can be crafty and sneaky good with his feet, but he's been dealing with a lower extremity issue. So we'll see if that impacts him at all. And I'm not sure the Texas offense is trending entirely in the right direction. I love Wisner at running back. There's no question there are weapons. I think Georgia may have surprised Texas a little bit in that first meeting because I think Texas felt like, hey, our lines of scrimmage, you know, we dealt with Michigan. We can handle these guys. And then it didn't really play out that way. And do you think, Brent, that Carson Beck is in a better place than he was the first time around? He made some big plays in that game. But in terms of throwing the football, he still had too many drops from these Georgia receivers. We saw it again against Georgia Tech. But he seems to be playing with the sort of championship edge to him right now that maybe wasn't there a month or two ago.
Yeah, I would agree with that too, because he really kind of hit a low against Georgia and certainly against Ole Miss, right? So, and that is, he has picked that up. And one thing you taught me early on years ago is who is helping the quarterback around him, and can we say Nate Frazier, Trav, has been a real help, I think, for that passing game, because if that running game is doing well, it takes a lot of pressure off that passing game.
Yeah, and I mean, what do we got? Trevor Etienne going to hit the portal again now? I mean,
really?
Unbelievable. But no, I felt this way really from the start of the season. First time I saw Nate Frazier against Clemson, my thinking was it won't surprise me if by the end of the season, he is the top guy, the top dog, so to speak, in that rotation. Now, some of that I know has had to do with ETN's health, but I think just as much, if not more, is the fact that Frazier right now, and they're getting healthier at running back too.
Yeah.
Right. Frazier is more of that guy right now for the Georgia Bulldogs. Hey, we'll move into Friday's games as we recap real quickly here before looking ahead to potential college football playoff scenarios. Also, we need to talk about, I guess, bowl scenarios with some of these teams too. Mm-hmm. Ole Miss right now, Brent, what's kind of the vibe after that Egg Bowl win for the Rebels? Is it, I guess it's wait and see. You got to see what happens with Alabama.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
With the CFP, and that's going to impact the order, obviously. But Orlando, maybe Vegas, Florida, what's that sense right now?
Well, I think you hit it on that. And look, where this season is, are there two coaches in this league that you can tell what's going on in them? One is Hugh Freeze, and the other one, maybe as much as anybody, is Lane Kiffin by their body language. Yeah. When they're at the podium, and particularly with Lane speaking virtually in a whisper at times.
Long season, man.
It has been. And look, the other thing I think that's weighing heavy on them is, okay, this is the best team we thought we had. And probably, yes, in decades, we had all the offensive players. We retooled this defense. And, Trav, they are still waiting on their fate at this point. I don't think that they will get in the playoffs by any means. So where do they go from there? And the other thing is going to be, without going to the playoffs, you're in a bowl game. Trav, how many of these guys are going to be available?
Yeah, that's going to be a major issue, I think, for teams across the board. If we had a show sponsor, it would probably be this one, Brent, in the show chat here. By the way, we appreciate you chiming in the show chat. We are live on Ryer on YouTube, so if you'd like to do that, feel free. Rusty Dent's Garage chimes in.
I like that.
With a good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Rusty Dent's Garage. That would be the perfect show sponsor, I think.
It would be.
For second helping. Well, that or a country buffet, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, here's the thing, too. I think you benefit from the playoff in ways that we haven't even thought of yet, mm-hmm. if you make the playoff. Because if you make it, and even if you lose in the first round, you're losing on December the 20th.
Sure.
So now you can get into the roster aspect more into it. Know more about where you're at before you go into the spring semester and your injuries that you have coming out of a season. That's another 2 weeks that you can maybe get a jump on. Guys need cleanups, guys need rehab, guys, you know, getting guys ready to go for your off season and your spring practice. You can have a jump on that. So that's one of the benefits, I think, to making the playoff that we really haven't talked about probably as much, but one to consider. Nonetheless, we talk about those Saturday games and kind of how that could shake up the bowl situation. And you start in that early game. I think our worst fears came true for Kentucky in that matchup with Louisville. It was time for Louisville to make a statement in that series, especially under Jeff Brohm in his second season. And the Cards did just that in Lexington.
Yeah, they really did. And again, offensively, they were challenged the entire year. I mean, they've really got to, I think with Cutter Bowley, they've got some, I think a little bit of optimism there and where that's going. Folks may not have heard yet, but Dane Key is going into the transfer portal. Now, Trav, I tell you right now, Dane Key won't be there long, will he? I mean, this guy could really help some football teams.
He has the feel of a Georgia transfer. Some of those we've seen over the last two or three years. Yeah. Dom Lovett.
Yeah.
London Humphreys.
Right.
You know, all these SEC receivers that have transferred into Athens. Ra-Ra Thomas. That didn't exactly play out all that well. But, yeah, Dane Key will certainly have a home. And, you know, you've been on this. You've really reinforced this on the program in recent weeks. The situation with Mark Stoops and Kentucky moving forward, it's been a win-win, obviously, I think, for both parties. But is this perhaps a mutual getting off point?
Is it
Stoops thinking, look, I've done everything I can do there. The bowl streak is over. We rode that as far as we could. you know, kind of your expectations maybe for this program moving forward without a postseason to speak of.
Well, and I think too that we'll finish recruiting tomorrow, and after that the portal opens on Monday. Trev, I'm just wondering out loud here. Could you, and we may not, but if you've got recruiting just over, the portal on Monday, could we see a either some kind of announcement or decision made with this situation in the next few days? I'm sure it would probably help Mark Stoops to get away from it a little while. I mean, he may in the back of his mind really know what he wants to do, but your point a few minutes ago about roster retention and so forth, I think we may know something one way or another on this one pretty soon.
Yeah, and you just had signing day yesterday.
That's right.
It literally never ends.
No.
And then you're in retention mode, and who you signed yesterday can impact who leaves in the portal. So yeah, it's a never-ending process, and one it'll be interesting to see how Mark Stoops decides to proceed.
Yes.
Moving forward. How about the seismic events last Saturday in the upstate at Clemson as South Carolina dramatically knocks off the rival Clemson Tigers with a 10-point fourth quarter? I'll say this for the South Carolina offense, Brent. It was balanced because Lenora Sellers threw for 164,
yeah,
and Lenora Sellers ran for 166.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yes.
That's about the offense, and it was enough as Sellers was heroic in the Gamecocks' second straight win in Death Valley in this series.
And how important that is, particularly for that fan base that's got as much hope right now as they ever have. Now, I don't think they're going to the playoffs, but to Trav, to at least be in the conversation, right?
Yeah.
I think is humongous for them.
Think about how we talk about South Carolina football.
Yeah.
We talk about South Carolina football in terms of can it get to six wins? That's the way if we're being real about South Carolina pretty much year in and year out, it's count up six wins for this team on an annual basis if you can.
Sure.
Instead, into November, you know, you're getting a little taste of that mania, of that fever, that college football playoff fever. That's a significant step.
And Trav, have they ever had a better November? But beating A&M, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Wofford, and Clemson?
2 years ago, they beat Tennessee.
Yes,
And Clemson.
And they beat the Gators 2 years
ago. It's been November for Beamer, November or something. But yeah, they've been very good 2 out of the last 3 years in the month of November, and that's when it matters most. And you know, I get it, South Carolina fans, you're getting a taste of this, and it's and there's a real sort of acute hyper want for this, because like we talked about earlier with SEC championship game appearances, when you get this close to even the 12-team format, you don't know if you're South Carolina or if you'll be this close again. You know, I think South Carolina ended up about where it should have been in the CFP rankings on Tuesday night. I will say this. If SMU loses to Clemson Saturday night, I don't think SMU should just fall behind Alabama, which I do believe. I think SMU should fall behind Ole Miss and South Carolina
too. Yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean, we're talking resumes, right?
Yes.
We're looking at SMU's resume, which will be nil. If they don't win this game Saturday night, they don't have a resume.
No, they really don't.
So, you know, I will say that about South Carolina. What do we think? You know, because South Carolina is kind of like Ole Miss. Now you wait to see what happens to Alabama. But, you know, we went from talking about maybe Jacksonville for South Carolina a couple weeks ago. South Carolina could easily end up in Orlando or, you know, moving up that order, right?
Oh, yeah. Look, with that defense and especially those rush ends who arguably at this point easily two of the best in the league with Kennard and Stewart. And then you've got one of the more exciting quarterbacks, you know, good and well, that they're going to carry a lot of people with them to a bowl game. And one more thing's happened to South Carolina that's significant They have a new AD, former TCU athletic director Jeremiah Donati, has been certainly picked, we think, is going to be the new athletic director. So I'm sure that's one of those things. Now, look, Shane Beamer's not going anywhere except to get a raise and certainly some vote for SEC Coach of the Year. But, Trev, it's significant whoever that athletic director is for any program.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You need to be synced up pretty well between that post and your head football coach. And now at a lot of places in the Southeastern Conference, your men's basketball coach too, because as we've seen here in the last couple of days, the SEC has absolutely laid waste to the once proud ACC.
Really?
In the SEC-ACC basketball challenge. Hey, also in that early window last Saturday, give Tennessee a lot of credit. Tennessee found itself almost in the exact same situation Alabama was in.
Yes.
In Nashville earlier in this season, down a couple of touchdowns, down really big with the potential to go down 17 there, I think, in the second quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you get a tremendous individual effort for an interception there in the end zone for Tennessee. And from that point forward, boy, it was all balls. And I'll say the difference between Tennessee in a situation like that and really Alabama throughout the season is that at the end of the day, Tennessee knew its defense could stabilize things.
No doubt.
To kind of get things where they needed to be, settle this thing down, because it wasn't the defense that really gave up the 14 points early. You had the kickoff return for Vanderbilt. You had the interception. But that defense kind of held it together until Nico and that ground game with Dylan Sampson and, you know, the rest of that Tennessee offense could check in there, Brent.
I'll tell you one thing, Trav, it really makes you wonder, and that they've had a great year. If they'd have beat Arkansas in that 19-14 loss, where this bunch would have gone. One of our favorite players this whole year, without a doubt, Dylan Sampson, record for rushing basically nearly 1,500 yards, Trav.
Yeah. I mean, still puts the ball on the ground, and that's actually what happened early Saturday. I put that one on Nico. No, that was Dylan Sampson again. I mean, that's a problem, but
it is.
Once he gets past that, you know, he goes for 178 on 25 carries.
It's
if you can just get him to avoid the early game turnover, you're in good shape. Diego Pavia, kind of a rough day again for this Vanderbilt offense. That Tennessee defense did the job. Diego with just 104 passing yards, a touchdown, and he had that interception there at the goal line in end zone. That was more of a great play by Tennessee than a really a bad play by Diego, but Vanderbilt still going bowling, Brent.
They are.
I'm guessing it could be somewhere in the state of Tennessee or close to home, I would think, for Vanderbilt.
Yeah, and that's just exciting. I mean, Diego's been one of our favorite players, not the favorite player the whole year. And I listen, why he can't get another year and come back, it just absolutely blew me. That's just nuts. But I will point out another thing for Tennessee, and with our history, we can really appreciate this. Josh Heupel now won 9 or more games in 3 straight seasons. That's the first time that's been done since one Phil Fulmer back in 1995 through 1999 when they won their national championship.
Yep, it's been pretty consistent. Had a disappointing finish a couple of years ago, but Tennessee definitely. You're looking at Tennessee as a home game in the opening round of the playoff right now. And, you know, if I had told you that after the disappointing loss to Georgia a couple of weeks ago, you might not have believed me, but it very much looks like it's going to be the case for the Big Orange up there in Knoxville. Also on Saturday, how about some snow in Como? Missouri gets the job done, 18-7. The Tigers win the fourth quarter. That was a tight game throughout. Taylen Green for Arkansas throws for 229. Andrew Armstrong, the Arkansas wide receiver, who I see has declared for the NFL draft, caps it with a 9 reception for 128 performance. But, you know, just enough from Missouri. Brady Cook with his legs was problematic. Marcus Carroll at the running back position. And, you know, we talk so much about Luther Burden, and rightfully so, mm-hmm. at the wide receiver position. But, you know, Theo Weiss is another guy that's going to play in the National Football League.
No doubt.
And might play for a long time. But yeah. Missouri gets to 9 wins and kind of gets into that log jam with South Carolina and Ole Miss in terms of, you know, next up in that higher mm-hmm. echelon of the pecking order for the postseason.
Yeah, and you really do wonder what could have been at Missouri. I mean, at Travitt, 9-3. And again, their non-con didn't help them at all, as easy as that was. But man, you wonder, I mean, if they're in that 10-2 or certainly 11-1 range, we're having a different conversation about them right now. But look, if there's such a thing as the toughest quarterback or the toughest player in the SEC, Brady Cook would have to be in line for that one. So it's going to be very interesting to see where Eli is going to take this team and what and how many lists of potential coaching changes his name will be on over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and how many he'll make sure he gets on.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I mean.
Or his representation.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Also on Saturday afternoon, you had the 89th playing of the Iron Bowl, Brent, Alabama, a 28-14 winner over the rival Tigers. There was a lot of talk coming from the Plains that this might be the year that Auburn actually not only goes into Tuscaloosa and is competitive, because the games really haven't been when they've been played at Bryant-Denny Stadium, but get over the hump, snap that 4-game Alabama win streak. Instead, it was one for the thumb for the Crimson Tide on Saturday afternoon.
Well, and we talked about the key to the game, and the key to the game was Jarquez Hunter, 13 carries for 56 yards. Now, if that was 156, then we would be talking about maybe something different here. But again, and before we get on Alabama, Trav, please help me on this. But if you're Hugh Freeze and you've got easily one of the best three running backs in the SEC, and you run him only 13 times, and you're at the goal line basically, or what, the 2-yard line. Yeah. And you kick a field goal instead of being able to run him. I'm not sure that there's been a player in the league this year that's been as wasted as Hunter has.
Yeah, I've said it before. I think Jarquez Hunter is going to be, you know, maybe a second-round pick, probably more, maybe more like a third or fourth.
Yeah.
He's going to test really well. And he's going to make a big impact early in his NFL career. And folks are going to be like, well, what was Auburn doing with Jarquez Hunter? Yeah. I'll say this. Auburn ran Hunter 10 times in the first half. So, you know, that's a reasonable number. Mm-hmm. 10 for 55, I think it was. But that third quarter for Alabama, when it hit Auburn with that 14-0 run coming out of the halftime, I thought that went a ways in kind of negating Hunter. But it's 28-14 with 12 minutes to go.
Right.
You're in Alabama territory, and you get Jarquez Hunter a touch. But you get him a touch so he can throw a double pass.
Yeah, really.
Directly to Alabama safety.
Yes, yes.
Ray Hubbard.
Yeah.
Ah, jeez. Mm. Yeah. If I'm an Auburn fan, that's the one I got the biggest problem with. You got a chance right there. You go get in the end zone with, let's say, even 10 minutes left in the game. And it's 28-21. Right. And you're wondering about the psyche of this Alabama team these days.
Yeah, really.
You know, you still got a shot.
Yeah.
DeAndre Lambert Smith for Auburn, a nice day. 8 catches for 116 yards. He also was involved in that brawl with Alabama defensive back Devontae Smith. I guess Keandre and Devontae aren't related. They're both Smiths, but they didn't interact like family. Or maybe they did. I mean, it was Thanksgiving weekend. Mm-hmm. I know families that interact that way.
over
the holidays. But you know, Jalen Milroe with a little bit of a roller coaster ride. He has 3 turnovers. An interception in Auburn territory at a fumble there in the second half that wasn't exactly ideal. Now, one of his turnovers was a strip sack from his blind side in which Caden Proctor just got blown by.
Yeah,
so
right.
I can't really put that on Jalen. Jalen also made some nice throws.
He did.
You know, throws for 256 on 24 attempts. You like that yards per attempt. Mm-hmm. Runs for 104 on 17 carries. And Jeremy Bernard had a great football game.
He sure did.
Not just by wide receiver standards, but just as a all-around football player, because he caught 7 balls for 111, Brent. But as a blocker and just some of the toughness that he brings to that side of the ball, they need more of it at other spots.
Yeah. Yeah, they really do. By the way, Milroe, 20 rushing touchdowns. The only SEC quarterbacks to do that, Tim Tebow, Cam Newton, and Johnny Manziel. So that's really good company at that point. I thought the difference in the game, Trev, Bama getting 200 yards rushing. And I thought what was really significant was Jim Miller carrying the ball 28 times.
A lot of that in the second half. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it really makes you wonder if they had seen more of that at this point. Now, Kobe Prentice, we understand, at wide receiver, expected to enter the portal. And I'm sure Bama will have their share of that. But, yes, it was a good way to end the season for Alabama. That certainly set them up for what could be some a very interesting Sunday from the playoff committee.
It could be. You know, it's interesting, too, the narratives with Kalen DeBoer going into his first season at Alabama. Remember when it was going to be, well, he's not going to be able to recruit.
Yeah.
And right. Then you look at yesterday, and it's a top three, top four class.
Yeah, number two. Yeah.
But the expectation was that he'll take that roster and sustain sort of the win-loss situation. And mm-hmm. that didn't really play out. 9-3 isn't bad. But we know what the standard is when it comes to wins and losses at Alabama. So it kind of been a little bit of a flip in year one under Kalen DeBoer. It looks like the recruiting is just fine.
Yes.
It's maybe more of adaptation to the league on game days than anything else. So as we continue on from Saturday's action, this one surprised me a little bit in primetime. I thought Oklahoma could probably take the same mm-hmm. approach it had against Alabama on the road. And perhaps even get the job done at LSU, but that did not turn out to be the case. Boy, you know, Garrett Nussmeier is a good old gunslinger type.
Yes.
But that's a tough dude too, man.
He is.
To leave, come back, throw for 277 and 3 touchdowns. You know, it was kind of the Jackson Arnold game again offensively for Oklahoma, but he ends up with 185 total yards between passing and running. That wasn't going to be enough. And impressive finish. This is what LSU needed to calm the Masters.
Really was.
Needed to beat Vandy at home. Needed to get a win over a brand program like Oklahoma, even though it's a 6-6 team. This is going to help Brian Kelly a little bit.
Oh, yeah. And a comment about both teams. Oklahoma has hired Washington State offensive coordinator Ben Arbuckle. So that will give Brent Venable some help on the offensive side of the ball. And I'm curious if this surprised you a little bit, Trav. Jackson Arnold is in the transfer portal.
Yeah, I was thinking, well, Jackson must not have been that impressed with the hire because that had been thought to be coming, I guess, with Jackson Arnold. Yeah, I'm not trying to be Adam Schefter or any. I don't have any real information on this pending free agency but you can already connect some dots to some landing spots for some of these guys, can't you? Like, you know, Auburn's going to be all in the portal.
Absolutely.
You know, a Jackson Arnold, maybe a Miller Moss, you know, these quarterbacks that are hitting the portal, boy, you mm-hmm. just think about, you know, what Auburn's probably going to look to do and probably maybe Ole Miss too.
Yeah.
You know, to me, Jackson Arnold's got some Jackson Dart attributes. So we'll see what Lane does.
Trev, real quick on LSU, and I'm curious what you've heard on this. Now, I have seen this, but I'm hesitant to say if it's much more than maybe even an erroneous report, but I saw where Harold Perkins plans on entering the
portal. Yeah.
Now, Trav, help me translate this. Does this mean, okay, we're thinking about going in the portal and we want a little more NIL money at this point? Because I can tell you, if he actually is serious and gets in the portal, and Trav, if he's healthy, boy, the suitors for him will be unbelievable.
Oh yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah, he is coming off, I think, a pretty significant injury. So,
yes,
you know how that plays. And look, they just went through a coordinator change.
Yep,
and sure the did. People that were there when he got there aren't there pretty much now. So, you know, that certainly could play into it as well. Prime time from last Saturday night, the Florida Gators. I don't get the sense this was enough of a beating for a lot of Florida fans. You know, go on the road, and it is a 2-10 Florida State team. I get it. Not good. But win by 20, and I've still heard some Florida fans, you know, getting on Napier, still getting on Napier for not winning by more than 20 on the road. But the Gators get it done. Workmanlike, I would say, the performance by the Gators at Doak Campbell last Saturday night.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. Look, the thing that's impressed me more about them than anything is this number. Last year they had 19 quarterback sacks. This year they've got nearly 40.
Yeah.
So I mean, when you double that, that certainly gives you a tremendous improvement. Their recruiting class at one point was 52nd. It ends up being 11th. Which is just remarkable. I think some other things. Kareem Jackson, the cornerback, plan on going to the portal. Kelby Collins also going to the portal. I understand Trey Wilson, the wide receiver, is planning on coming back. So, boy, oh boy. And look, I'm curious what you've heard. Tampa, Jacksonville. But it sounds like the Gators will end up in the state of Florida and make some bowl really happy.
Yeah, an unimaginable scenario a month ago. I mean, you couldn't really even think like that. But a lot of this goes back to DJ Lagway, his impact on that football team.
Oh, yeah.
And everything that goes into it. Because a lot of what you've seen here in the last couple of days on the recruiting front, the last week or two, that's DJ Lagway impact. When you've got that dynamic guy at the biggest position on the football team, the most important position, anything's possible. So you need to ride this for as long as you can with DJ Lagway. Good to see Montrell Johnson
have
a good game. The veteran running back, been injured this year for Florida. And, you know, Florida just line of scrimmage in it. As you said, I think offensively they've come a long way in that area. And then defensively, they've gotten back to what Florida used to be.
Absolutely.
You know, so much of Florida's past is attached to the fun and gun and Tim Tebow and Percy Harvin, and understandably so, great players. But the championship Florida teams were really, really, really talented and really, really good on the defensive side of the ball, really across the board. Let's talk about the game from Saturday night. The Texas Longhorns travel to College Station. Brent, come away with a 17-7 win. Didn't feel like Texas was ever really threatened, and in large part because of that defense that we talked about. I mean, this Texas defense, that's the defense that you can win a national championship with.
I think can.
Some areas offensively, you're a little bit I'll say this for Sark, though. When Sark gets the game manageable or in control, he doesn't, like a lot of offensive guys, he doesn't go into, okay, that's cool, but hold my beer and watch this. You know, he does. Yeah. He does a great job for an offensive guy of knowing, hey, I got this defense. I don't have to show my tail, so to speak. I don't have to make it about me here when we're up 17-0 going into the second half. And boy, that defense delivered again. Quintrevi and Wisner, too, for Texas at the running back position. With those injuries that they had even before the season started, this guy's been a revelation. It just seems like he gets better every week, too.
He really does. And look, and we know, and Trev, those injuries for Texas at the running back position, they started, in about August?
So,
preseason. For them to be able to play the way that they have, I still think the greatest job Sark has done is on this line of scrimmage on both sides of it, frankly. And I mean, there were times for A&M that, and their beat writers told us the same thing, that They just couldn't block Texas. And again, I don't care how complicated we make this stuff, and Texas has got really good quarterback skill position. But if you can't block somebody, that is a big-time problem. And A&M just was not able to do that. Frankly, Texas had the ball for 35 minutes and ran 21 more plays. And all that just kind of added up. They kept Marcel Reed in check. And look, A&M, Trev, A&M, as you know, has got a pretty good front seven on defense. But that Texas O-line would not let them control the game.
No, they wouldn't. You know, it's going to be interesting Saturday in Atlanta with Texas, because I'm picking Georgia to win that game. And I want your pick here in just a second. But there's one player for Texas that gives me pause in terms of picking Georgia. And it's not Quinn Ewers. It's not any of the wide receivers. Mm-hmm. It's not really other than that defense collectively, which has star power from front to back. They do. I think Gunnar Helm, the tight end.
Yeah, really.
And Brock Bowers a little bit, Georgia this week in the middle of the field. I just see with Georgia, what I see this year defensively are instances where there's just a lot of green and there's not people around, which I'm not used to seeing from a Glenn Schumann and Kirby Smart production. That's the guy I think that could be a problem. I'm not saying he's going to go for 120 yards from that, but in some chunk situations and some big situations, Gunnar Helm. And then also, you know, both these teams will throw it to the running backs too.
Yeah, I mean,
Sark likes to throw it to the backs. Bobo, we've seen more and more of that this year. So give me your pick for Saturday, Brent, when we look ahead to Texas, Georgia.
Yeah, I like Georgia too. I think this game means a lot to Kirby Smart. He got that from Nick Saban about how important it is to win your conference. And Trav, you know good and well how, and I won't say poorly because Georgia Tech caused a lot of that, but a lot of those mistakes against Tech, I think, are going to be cleaned up in this situation with Texas. But I know how important this game is to Kirby, and they will play extremely well. And oh, by the way, with all this talk of, well, should the SEC do away with this championship game? Trav, I know that they've got the press conferences this afternoon. I don't think if I was a media, I would be getting Greg Sankey in the corner and asking him if this game's going away.
You see that the S in my hat are over here?
The
SEC up there? Two lines through the S. That's dollar signs.
Yeah, that's right.
That dollar sign's not going away.
No,
anytime soon. Hey, we've got viewers checking in. Brent, Ben checking in says SEC better be ready for Florida and South Carolina next couple of years. I think Ben is thinking DJ Lagway and Lenora Sellers.
Yes,
specifically for both those teams. Tom checking in here. We appreciate it, Tom. He says, great conversation as always, gentlemen. Thanks for the insight. Hey, thank you, Tom.
Absolutely.
For chiming in as well. So, Brent, let me put the scenario out to you for this weekend, this Saturday. Regardless of what happens in Atlanta, I think we both agree both those teams are in the college football playoff. Could be huge for seeding purposes. Mm-hmm. Could be huge in terms of when SEC teams might see each other in the
playoff. No doubt.
Let me ask you about the ACC championship game. What is your stance on that in terms of, is the ACC in your mind a one-bid league? Should it be winner advances, loser goes to the bowl situation? What's your comfort level, I guess, with the SEC getting four teams in after everything is said and done Saturday?
Yeah, and I'll lay this as a bottom line. And look, I'm not saying it's fair. I'm just saying it's the way that these situations work. I think the committee showed their hand this week by putting Alabama at 11. And I frankly don't think they moved them because of this. Is they know that if they keep Alabama at 11, that they've got a opening game of Alabama being on the road, either against Notre Dame or Penn State.
Or could be Texas.
It could be. Yeah. But here's the reality of this. And again, I'm not saying it's fair. I'm just saying this is the way it works. Look, your number for television is 4 million. That's what everybody tries to get to. Alabama, Tennessee was 10 million. Georgia, Texas was 13 million. Wow. And Trev, I can tell you these, and I'm not saying the TV people are in the room with the committee, but the committee knows where all these things stand and where they're going to be. And they know with an Alabama team, win or lose, they would have TV gold wherever they go and whoever they play.
And they're going to have resume to point to.
They would.
Because if SMU loses to Clemson, and I like Clemson in that game. I don't know about you. I kind of feel like Clemson's lines of scrimmage or defensive line can control that game. If Clemson wins that game, SMU will be 0-2 against top 25 teams this season.
Correct.
You know, and I know Alabama has three losses, and Alabama's 2 of 3 were against six-loss teams, but they were six-loss SEC teams.
Yeah.
I think that even in that scenario, the committee will be able to point to Ward Manuel tried to tell us Tuesday night.
Basically. He basically
when they asked him the difference between Alabama and Miami, he cited top 25 and wins against teams with more than six wins.
Correct.
And if SMU, Alabama is 3-1, I think, against top 25.
That's right.
And they're 6-1 against teams with more than six wins. And basically Miami was, I think, 0-2 against top 25 teams,
right,
and
3-2
against teams with more than six wins.
Yes.
4-2. I mean, so SMU would be 0-2 and 5-2. You know, what's the difference there? And then that's before everything you pointed out so accurately. You know, ESPN ain't writing that check for SMU at Penn State in the first round.
No. Yeah. And look,
maybe in 85 they would have.
Yeah.
You know, really? You had the Pony Express and all that, 83 or something.
Yes.
But not yet. And I know Rhett Lashley, and I get it. He's doing his, he's doing what he has to do. In his media rounds is talking about, well, why should we even play in a conference championship game? We'd be in if we didn't play, right? No, you wouldn't. That means you would have forfeited.
Yeah.
You would have fell out that way too.
Right.
But, you know, and Rhett knows SMU isn't Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, you know, the blue bloods. But I will say this in defense of SMU, you know, we pick at SMU, but boy, the Big Ten is just sitting over there quietly with their 4 in.
Oh, yeah. And absolutely.
They know 3 of their teams don't have much of a resume.
Yeah.
And Penn State, Indiana, and Ohio State
don't
have much.
No.
But they're in a great spot. They got 4 in.
Absolutely.
Didn't really have to work that hard to do it.
I think most folks know this. We've got 12 this year, 12 next year. And in 26, we're going to have either 14 or 16, and the people who are going to make decision on that are going to be the Big Ten and the SEC.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of this, too, you got to think. Because, you know, if you get into a situation where you're only taking 3 from one of those two leagues,
right,
and you're doing it kind of consistently, they'll just go do their own thing.
Yeah, sure they will.
Down the road. That's just the reality of the situation. Well, Brent, as always, man, a lot of fun here with you on the Ryer on YouTube channel. If you haven't subscribed to the channel as of yet, we would certainly appreciate you hitting that subscribe button, hitting that notification bell. That way you're alerted to our content as it drops here on the channel. And we always appreciate a thumbs up here on the show. Anything else, Brent, before we get out of here?
Trev, I'm curious your take on Connor Wiegman going to the portal. Yeah. The A&M quarterback, 2 years of eligibility remaining, 9-4 in 13 career starts, 4-1 this season. Now,
another guy that I can see, you know, if Lane goes that way.
Yes.
Lane likes a little more mobility these days, it seems like, though.
He does. Absolutely.
Auburn. You know, I'm just connecting dots here. Yeah. I don't know how we're going to, you know, I don't know if we're going to have enough seats for all these quarterbacks we're putting in the Auburn quarterback room.
Really?
We've got about seven of them.
At least. Yeah, I agree with that. But I tell you what, we're going to have, by the time we get together again, we will know who CFP. Is going to be the CFP. And we'll have the Heisman folks who will be going to New York with that. And by the way, Trav, I wanted to mention, too, the money involved with this, you get $4 million if you just make the playoffs. Mm. You get $4 million per team in the quarterfinals.
Wow.
$6 million per team in the semifinals. And $6 million per team in the title game. So, Trav, would you say there's some money at stake here?
Well, and with revenue sharing coming in, you're going to need all of it.
You sure are.
Because it's not just the payroll, personnel-wise. Yeah, support staff now being what they are, you're paying GMs, getting up to a million a year in any, at any moment now, it seems like, for support staff. Yes. You're going to need every bit of – I know it's a lot, but they're going to need it.
Oh, they are. Did we mention, Trav, I think you did, the owner reminder, the portal opens Monday. So
it does.
A little more action to go with, right?
Yeah, just something else to take into account. College football 2024. We love it. We love talking about it with you guys and gals, and we appreciate you tuning in with us here live. And also, you can, of course, find the show archived on YouTube at Ryer on YouTube. And also on podcast formats, whether that's Apple, whether that's Spotify, you name it, we do add the podcast formats, the audio formats of the program as well. Brent, look forward to doing it again next week.
Me too, bud. Enjoy it as always. Take care.
For Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us right here on Second Helping on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Until next time, so long, everybody.